Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the last witness, this is U.S. Magnesium's witness, Roger Swenson, who's on the telephone with your indulgence, and thank you for that. Mr. Swenson, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Good. If you'll speak up like that, I think people will be able to hear you back. Mr. Swenson, I'm sorry, thank you. Mr. Swenson, would you give your full name and on whose behalf you're testifying here?
My name is Roger Swenson. I've worked with Equilon Consulting, and I'm testifying in this matter today on behalf of U.S. Magnesium.
And Mr. Swenson, did you cause to be prepared and filed in this docket U.S. Mag Exhibit 1.0, your direct testimony, U.S. Mag Exhibit 1.0R, rebuttal testimony, and U.S. Mag Exhibit 1.0SR, sir, rebuttal testimony?
Yes, I did.
And do you have any corrections to any of that pre-file testimony?
No, I do not.
And do you adopt that testimony as your testimony under oath here this afternoon?
Yes, I do.
I'd move the admission of U.S. Mag Exhibits 1, 1R, and 1SR, Mr. Chairman.
No objection.
No. No objection.
Thank you. Mr. Swenson, do you have a brief summary of your testimony?
Yes, I do.
Would you present that now, please?
I believe that customers should be shown what the proposed charges will be for a period to understand the value of spending time to improve accuracy. I recommend that a year of informative feedback be provided to customers showing what these charges could be. I think this will create a more accurate value base, driving the accuracy that customers can have. And taking the time to do that will establish a better test period data for the basis for actual costs. I believe that calculations should include real data and actual costs, taking into account net position for all system gas and on the system. I believe it should take into account a level of baseline flexibility that the system has inherently, such as line pack, before initiating a calculation of cost. I worry about shortcuts that seem easier, but I don't believe will give the results that we're after in this matter. A single variable charge essentially can penalize accurate nominating customers without a cost basis. I'm concerned about implementing rates based on a value of service and calculating the cost basis on things that may not have occurred. The best example in this matter is the assumed losses of gas on transportation that may or may not have occurred, and assuming a cost for that imaginary lost gas at 2 times the market value of gas using the customer's claim cost gas.
Keep your voice up, please.
That's the summary of my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Swenson. Mr. Swenson's available for cross-examination.
No questions.
No questions.
No questions.
I just have a couple. Can you hear me, Mr. Swenson?
Yes, I'm turning my phone up just a little bit, but now I can. Let me try now.
Great, thank you. This is Rex Olson. I'm the lawyer for the Office of Consumer Services. Do you have your sir rebuttal testimony handy?
Yes, I do.
Could I ask you to look at lines 32 through 36?
I've got that up.
Great, thank you. It appears there that you're suggesting that the company should train less sophisticated TS customers how to forecast demand. Is that a fair assessment on that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at my rebuttal testimony.
Ah, that would do it.
Yeah, now I'm looking at it, and
it would be not.
Well,
no.
I'm suggesting that the company may have the better expertise to help some of these smaller individual customers learn how to forecast somewhat better.
Well, who would you suggest should pay for that service? Would that be the sales customers or the TS customers or who?
Well, I think that all transportation customers pay a fixed cost fee to help cover the cost of the extra services that the company provides. So I assume that those account reps could be utilized that are being paid out of those administrative charges.
Well, I'd submit that it might not that kind of training be better considered the responsibility of the agents who have solicited the customers? I guess the final question I have on that is, by what metric or who would determine which of these customers would lack the sophistication such that they would qualify for the services? Okay, I have nothing further. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I have no questions. Thank you.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The only matter the company would raise, we would request the opportunity for post-hearing briefs in lieu of closing statements, and I would, so we would make that request.
Post-hearing
briefs, either. We'd like the opportunity to synthesize some of what was said here today along with the pre-filed testimony to the extent that there are legal issues, and I think a couple have been raised today. We'd like to address those in a brief or statement post-hearing rather than having closing statements here tonight.
Do you have a proposal in terms of
time
frame and whether
there's anything on that? We're happy to do whatever the commission thinks is appropriate. I hadn't given page limits any thought, but I think a week or 10 days would be plenty of time to put together what we need.
Sorry. Okay, thank you.
Ms. Schmidt,
any comment on the proposal?
Yes, I do. If post-hearing briefs are ordered, I believe that it would be necessary to have a copy of the transcript in hand for those briefs to be most meaningful. So if they are ordered, I suggest that the time period begin to run after the transcript is posted on the commission's website.
The company would be happy to arrange with the court reporter for an expedited transcript as well, if to the extent that's helpful.
Okay, thank you. Anything else, Ms. Schmidt?
I may ask for a few extra days for all of us because, yes, I'll say it on the record, I'm going on vacation.
Okay. Mr. Olson.
I don't believe the office feels that's necessary to have the post-hearing briefs, but obviously if you direct us to do those, we will do them, and I would agree it would be helpful to have the transcript and as much time as you deem you could reasonably provide us, as we're all busy.
Okay. Let me just ask one more question of these two before we go on, and this question is for everyone to consider, though. Is there much of a practical distinction between the commission ordering briefing or the commission allowing briefing? Does that, in a practical sense, does that make any difference?
Only with regard to when that time period begins to run.
Okay. Mr. Olson.
Well, I guess if it's ordered, we of course would have to do it. If it's something that is discretionary, we would decide whether as a matter of policy it was worth the time or trouble. So I guess that would be the distinction I'd make on that.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Dodge.
And I would leave it up to the commission whether you think post-hearing briefs would be useful or not. I think the practice is typically not to include those other than in cases where you think it might be helpful for parties to kind of bring their positions together in one statement. My view is if the commission thinks it would be helpful, you should request those. If not, I think you shouldn't, if you think you understand everything adequately. But we're more than happy to brief it if you think that would be helpful.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I'll just reiterate Mr. Dodge's comments.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Williams?
The only thing I think I would add is that if the commission desires to have some post-hearing briefs, that you may want to direct us as to what issues, or should we brief a position generally. If there's something specific that you would like us to address, I'd like some direction on that, if possible.
Okay. I think we should probably recess and discuss the issue, but before we do that, I'll see if Commissioner Jordan or Commissioner White or Commissioner Clark have any questions before we recess for a minute or two.
I'm just thinking maybe we ought to report back at 5 what we decide. Rather
everybody
than
in the room
reconvening twice.
Yes, sir.
That makes sense. Okay, anything further then?
No
other
thank
questions?
You.
Okay, we'll be in recess until 5 o'clock.
Thank you.